One of the things that I'm a little frustrated is I'm trying to get a hold of Professor McCanny. I see more and more evidence coming in that we have hyper-elliptical comets. I talked about it last week. I wanted to expand on that. We know they're being pushed in from the Oort cloud by something. We have increasing evidence that there's increased volcanism and strange activity on the sun with it flipping its pole, and on increased volcanism and nuclear activity on all the planets, which are all basically nuclear reactors with a crust on them, Saturn, Jupiter. The only one that doesn't, by the way, is Mars, which basically has a dead core, so it doesn't have a magnetic field. The magnetic field of the moon, of the Mars, is like minuscule. It's like 1/100th or less than ours because it doesn't have a molten core like us. So it doesn't have a nuclear reactor. It doesn't have a Van Allen radiation belt around it. So Mars really couldn't be, if you want to call it, terraformed unless we actually artificially created a magnetic sphere around the planet Mars in order to protect it. And that's probably part of the reason why Mars had its atmosphere and its water stripped off it, because it didn't have any protective magnetosphere.
Right.
Interesting, eh?
It is very interesting.
And it's probably tied directly. And any comments about this flu and about the ultraviolet light issues? We now have, by the way, meters through LESS EMF, A and B meters, B meter, and a C meter through LESS EMF. We also have a very good data logging nuclear detector that's about half the price of the Inspector Plus or Inspector EXP. It's not as sensitive. I tell people the one that I'd recommend would be an Inspector EXP, because it has an arm so you can swing around over your fish and say, click, 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 see you away. So what you do is you kind of get your bullhorn out, like Alex Jones, which I love his bullhorn. You get your bullhorn out beside your radiation detector, and you have a nuclear safety sign on your chest. You flip, drop it down, and say, back away from the fish counter.
That would be very handy.
You can imagine that put up on YouTube, how popular that would be, right?
Right.
Somebody else is videotaping you with their iPhone or their Android. Well, you're backing away from the fish counter with your cart and your other produce. Okay, and we're back with John Moore and Ann Morrison. Ann, what's the latest you're finding on all of the areas you followed? Volcanism, earthquakes, ultraviolet light, earth changes, space weather, near-earth space objects. We just had another, I guess, meteor storm that really passed through. And we have a lot of controversy, which is hard to get an answer from Professor McCanny as to what he thinks about all this. I know there's a storm going on. Him and people like, I'm not going to mention his last name, John, and various other individuals, over what we call the Planet X. I don't like to call it Planet X. I call it what it really is. It's Nemesis. It's a red dwarf star, not a brown dwarf. It is probably pretty far out there. Most likely it's, you know, out by Saturn or further. But there is an object that's been pushing in elliptical comets from the Oort cloud, which is 0.73 light years away from the sun. That's a long ways out. 0.73 light years. That's a lot. That means it takes, you know, 3/4 of a year for the light to actually get there. That's a long way out. So, you know, whatever this object is, and it has a hyperelliptic orbit that comes in about every 3,600 years, this is the same, quote, star that returned the twin of the sun, the evil twin, if you want to call it, the destroyer, the winged destroyer that the cartouches in Egypt can show you. I believe it's out there, but I don't believe it's in the inner solar system. It's coming in, though, and I'm not going to give you dates or times, but I know its effects are things like the Ison comet, a CME that happened 3 weeks ago, that they had a number of former CIA agents, and you can look at it on yourself. Just go to YouTube, and you can find it. It's a recent CME, and you can see it where they had a discussion to say, we're really freaked out by this now, because if it had hit us, it would have wiped out the satellites and their ground-based generation. We have ultraviolet lights shifting because the sun's putting out more light, and we're geoengineering that is destroying the atmosphere, and we have Fukushima destroying the upper ozone layer, all increasing dangerous ultraviolet B, C, and D light, all bad. And we're talking about death of the forest, the phytoplankton, and then the crops. We have none of the death of the bees, and this is one of four or five factors why the bees are dying, one of the big factors, along with neonicotinoid pesticides, cell phones, Wi-Fi networks, genetically modified foods that create bacillus thuringiensis toxins in the bees' gut. So when people say on, like, a Time magazine, we got to figure this out, we have been figured out, but we won't do it. We won't stop the pesticides. We won't stop the Wi-Fi network. We won't stop geoengineering the upper atmosphere because they want to weaponize the planet. So, and what's the latest in all these space weather and other issues, including the flu? But this is coming. It's not a matter of if, but when are we going to get such a big spike? We're seeing little spikes, But we're going to get some big spikes from Japan, where there's a hydrovolcanic explosion, a hydrogen explosion, a true nuclear explosion, which could create a tsunami. We literally could have the prophecies that they talk about the dragon of Japan, which, by the way, these ancient prophecies are like the whole spine of the dragon is the islands of Japan. And Mount Fuji is like the tail of the dragon. And when Mount Fuji recharges, which it blows every 150 years, and the fault line that runs from Fukushima runs directly to the magma chamber at Mount Fuji. Not a good thing. John, on your show, you've known for years of Professor McCanny, and I'm trying to get him back on the show. He's in a rural area where whatever he's doing his research, it's really difficult to get hold of him. I can drop an email, sometimes catch him by Skype for a few minutes, or he calls me back. He's had a running battle with people like John DiNardo and a number of other characters. And the Yowza guy, I didn't even want to mention his name. There really is something out in space there, but I highly doubt that the information that these people have is valid enough to even predict a specific time window. Even if some of it is correct, they can't take their two or three data points and then say, well, we have an orbit now, we know when this is coming in and what time it is. It's my guess that the dwarf star, and it's not a brown dwarf, by the way, it's a red dwarf. It's a red dwarf because of the magnetic field flux lines, which will have an effect at a distance. Brown dwarfs don't. They have only effects in gravity. A red dwarf, though, has a powerful magnetic field that potentially, according to the work that I've seen, it's 200 times stronger than the magnetic field of the entire sun. That's a big deal. And the reason why is it's going to cause plasma storms in the sun. It's a big problem right now, and it could be for, who knows, many years when this finally does come in, but it could be, 8-10 years or more. But right now is all these comets coming in, and the latest one is not only the Ison comet, but sighting spring. So, Anne, tell us about these comets. These are hyper-elliptical comets. They're being pushed in from the Oort cloud by something, i.e., and people call it Planet X. It isn't. It's a star. It's a twin star to the sun. It's basically a stillborn star. We'll call it a red dwarf star. And 80% of the stars in our Milky Way galaxy, and that's 400 billion stars, 80% of them have at least a twin star, and many of them have, there's some actually as many as 6 stars in some kind of complex orbital pattern, literally are kind of going through this kind of electronic dance, almost like like grains of sand vibrating on a drum that you could see, and they're dancing around each other out in deep space. So it's not an anomaly. This is actually the standard thing to have a dwarf star coming in hyper-elliptical orbit. Being pulled in a long sequence, and it may even have orbital objects around it that are coming in too. But the big danger right now is these hyperelliptical comets grazing the sun are coming close enough to start off a coronal mass ejection if it comes in. I don't know if I would believe the times and date, which is, crying wolf too often, the guys that say this of the kill zone and this and that, and they're always wrong, they're always flogging a new book, a new video, a new this and that, it gets nauseating. And that's why Professor McCanny, I think, is being careful. But on the other side, he's written books and made on television appearances talking about, quote, Planet X is a very likely a star or a large planet-like object. And he's presented a lot of evidence over the past decade. So I think Professor McCanny is trying to, not make any commitments, but these guys are trying to push him.
Well, and he's made his record, and he can stand on his record without having to really say much else.
Right, and I think that's good. And what I want to do, though, is clarify. I agree with McCanny. I think this object is pretty far out. My guess is it's at least double the distance of Jupiter, but it is coming in. And what's coming in right now are not only one or two comets, but probably a whole trail of these guys. When it really starts being a light show is when this object starts to get into the area of the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Then you're just going to really start seeing things start to go crazy. And as it crosses the ecliptic and we start seeing superstorms on the sun, that's going to get bad just because of the presence at a distance of this object, which could be later this decade. My guess is, though, in the next few years, we're going to suffer comets whipping in and a lot of light shows. If any of these CMEs are directed at Earth, we had missed one 3 weeks ago, that if it hit us, we would have been in a world of hurt. Tell us about that, Ann, because this one really freaked out the government, and they realized, like, whoosh, like they say in the military, if you hear a bullet whiz past your ear, that means you're not dead.
Well, I think that the scary part is that I was watching the the warnings that were coming off the sun, where they tell you about the flares and the magnitude and the duration and all that, there were no CMEs released by the sun. These CMEs are coming from someplace else.
Yeah.
And they, for some reason, Ison comet will have a close approach to the sun at the end of November, and then it'll continue back out. It'll be coming in tangentially to the solar system, and it won't really approach any planets, but when it goes behind the sun, when it gets close to the sun, it's going to be at 800,000 miles from the surface of the sun. It's bound to perturbate the sun. In other words, there'll be flares and activities and all that, and CMEs. And as the sun rotates, then that activity will continue, and then the Earth and Venus and Mars would be in the way, and could, in the early, let's say, the first quarter of 2014, could suffer direct damage from solar flares that were caused by Ison. Now, in addition, at the end of 2004, in October, there's going to be another comet, another hyperbolic.
2014, you mean?
Well, yeah, what did I say? 2014, in October.
Yeah.
At the end of October 2014, there's the sighting spring comet that's coming in. It was just discovered this year. And it's going to be very close to Mars. And I've just pulled the numbers off. It's going to approach, the nominal distance to Mars will be 76,000 miles. The minimum distance will be 24,000 miles, and the maximum distance would be 130,000 miles. And that's because there's uncertainty in the measurements. You know, as sighting spring gets closer, they'll get the orbit better, refined. So there's every possibility that sighting spring could smash into Mars, could create more moons on Mars, and could actually give it a atmosphere. And so that'll be worth watching even before it gets to the sun. Of course, if it hits Mars, it won't get to the sun.
That's amazing. The other disasters you see that we should prepare for, we had on the show earlier this week, we had Brent Senior from Doomsday Castle, and they have seven more series on. It's on Tuesday nights at Nat Geo, 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern. And, you know, the family, they have 10 kids, and they're training them up to know how to defend this Doomsday Castle in North Carolina. I think it's an admirable policy. The only thing I disagreed with is he said, well, he thinks the government's preparing, and they're doing the right thing. I'm thinking, no. And he said, well, you know, I'm a patriot. I said, well, it's not unpatriotic to question your government, because they should have hardened the power grid, because we don't have manufacturing of step-down transformers if they blow. We should have notified the people to make certain that they have the food, water, and other supplies, because the government's not going to bring them. You know, if you're waiting for FEMA to bring a big truck full of water, bottled water and MREs and other food, you expect them to kind of give you nice warm blankets, make sure you've got tents and can take care of you because your house is unstable because you get hit with an earthquake, or to salve your burns if you've got second-degree burns because you went out in the sun in the middle of the day and the ultraviolet light burnt you. No, they're not going to have that. And I got to tell people that the government's not preparing. What they're doing, and this is something I want to repeat again so people get it, because you're not going to hear it anywhere else. The government is trying to create disasters like the Marathon bombing in Boston, like the Middle Eastern War, like 9/11, so that they can control the chaos before things get into galactic and cosmic events that they can't control. And so they want control now with their databases and their biometric world currency and their NSA spying, so that we won't interfere with their survival with the seeds in Sakhalin Island, Svalbard, Norway, their stem cell supply stored underground in vaults so they can recreate the human race. Literally a seed vault, like the seed vault of stem cells of Noah. You know, believe it or not, that's, they do have this. You don't realize that the globalists, quote, don't need or want us. In fact, we just want to make sure we don't interfere with their survival. That's why they're not being forthcoming. That's why they're fully stocked up there. And if you look at the requisitions of supplies, and we talked to all our supplying companies that supply us, you know, not only from the eFoods people here, but you know, our Ready Store and our Wise Foods, which we have two different suppliers on our NutraMedical show, they're all being tapped up by the government. And the reason is, they're ready. John, your comment.
Well, they are ready, and we need to get ready, spiritually, mentally, and physically.
Yeah, you need to get ready. And listen to your show again. Until we got to correct the time at 6 to 7 Central Time, Monday to Friday.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to another amazing weekend. And you better prepare. Again, every day I do a little bit of preparation. You know, as I tell you, every day is a sunny day. Every day is a day to smile. Every day is a day to prayer. And every day is a day to prep. I call it the prepper's prayer. Prepper's prayer.
I say dig fast, dig deep.
There you go.
Get an underground bunker.
Yeah, it's going to get hairy. And, you know, as I say, I saw the guy in the Doomsday Prepper. A year before the disaster, you're considered an idiot. A day after it, you're considered a genius.